across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Nice to have you back here at 7:06 on a Wednesday morning. We have flipped a page on the calendar after all of those April showers. We get to enjoy the flowers in this particular month. What month has it got to be? We're trying this again, by the way. What month has it got to be, Justin?
Gonna be May.
We did it.
Craig worked so hard for that. Oh, I just...
I searched files. I cut audio. Like, granted, it was maybe a total of 48 seconds of total work, but I'm doing it between the dials and making things happen. I'm working the world, baby. I'm a radio.
And are we getting the payoff for that, you know, 2 second snip of audio? I don't know because I think Timberlake is still saying it's going to be me, but everybody else is like, it's going to be May. So.
Wow!
When you see the memes and the gifs and everything today, that's where it comes from. Worth it or not, I'm
just proud of myself because I did the work of a producer and I produced, baby.
You could not be more right. In fact, cue up that beautiful bean footage again. I think the listeners deserve to hear the amount of work you put into this. Listen closely as I tell you, we flipped the calendar. It's Wednesday. It's the first day of what now?
Gonna be May.
All right, folks, I'm out of here. See you later.
Pat, you're on the board. Later this hour is our homeroom segment, all about public education, and a new report from the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction looking into the severity and the causes of the ongoing teacher shortage in an effort to determine what kinds of things can be done to encourage the educators of tomorrow and get them to stay. It's about recruitment, it's about retention, and so much more. If you missed our last hour when we talked to former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who now is working to connect Wisconsinites with millions of dollars in energy efficiency funds. And then before that, we talked to Kyle Kaminsky, our colleague over at the Gander in Michigan. He writes a newsletter twice a month about legal marijuana themes, especially the next one's going to talk about the federal government deciding yesterday that it would like to reclassify marijuana and take it out of the class one drugs where it's, you know, likened to cocaine and fentanyl and give it a more realistic class three rating. If you missed those at all, you can always catch what we do as a podcast or go to civicmedia.us where every hour is another episode that you can listen to and not miss a thing. From Rob, he says, good morning from Shawano today. Has a doctor's appointment there, so he's mowing this afternoon. In Tigerton, 0.3 inch of rain. The streams are getting above the banks. Traveling to Shawano along Highway 29, and there's some light fog along there. And he mentions that he can get WXCO in Wausau all the way to Shawano, so we appreciate that. He also says it's 54 in Shawano. Meanwhile, Roger reports that on this 1st of May, it now means that locally grown radio, WFHR, is at full power by 6 a.m. now, because of the earlier sunrise. So we appreciate all of our listeners checking in. You can call or text us or send an email. You can use the Civic Media app along the way. Our number is 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. Call or text us from the app. We'd love to hear from you today. 7 o'clock temperatures around Wisconsin include 52 here on Lake Wissota, 49 in Hayward. Park Falls is at 50, Wausau 52, Green Bay 56. La Crosse is at 53, Rapids is at 53, Oshkosh 59 now, Madison 59, and Waukesha has 61 degrees. There will be another edition of a candidate forum tonight on some Civic Media radio stations among the three Democrats, each of them hoping to win the August primary and go up against Republican incumbent Congressman Derek Van Orden. So you have Katrina Shanklin, Eric Wilson, and Rebecca Cook. They will all be at the Student Union Theater at UW-La Crosse for a forum that starts at 6:30 tonight. And that forum will air on stations in and around the 3rd Congressional District, including WLCX, The Eagle in La Crosse, 93.5 The Tap here in the Chippewa Valley, locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, and News from the Center, WRCE in Richland Center. There will be another forum June 16th at UW-Platteville, and then one more July 12th at CVTC in Eau Claire. Well, Wisconsin will be the center of the political universe again today with former President Donald Trump. On Wednesdays, they take a break from his criminal hush money election interference trial in Manhattan. So on Wednesdays, he can travel, and he's coming to Wisconsin. He'll be at the Waukesha County Expo Center, scheduled for 2 o'clock today, which means the Maggie Dawn Show will be on across the Civic Media Radio Network, and Maggie will be joined by a Civic Media team to cover the event of the former president's arrival, what he has to say, probably do a lot of fact-checking on what he has to say, but again, underscore the importance of every Wisconsin voter. For as close as this election is bound to be, that's where we sit, you know, in this day and age, that despite what the things that Donald Trump has said and done, this trial and the many other trials yet to follow, it's going to be a close election, near as we can tell from all the polling. And so it makes it incumbent upon us to cover things like a Trump appearance in Waukesha County later today. If you missed it yesterday afternoon, I would highly recommend reading something that you're probably not going to like, but I feel it's important for you to read it anyway, and it will inform your conversations with others about the former president. From Time Magazine online, the story is entitled "How Far Trump Would Go." Eric Cortalesa reports after doing 2 interviews with the former president. His lead goes like this: Donald Trump thinks he's identified a crucial mistake of his first term. He was too nice. And then the reporter continues to talk more about doing 2 different long-form interviews with Donald Trump for this article to make sure that Trump is clear, or as clear as Trump can be, on what he would do or what he would like to do if he were to be elected to another term. And then you take all of that, and can you sum it up into one paragraph? Yeah, you can. Let me take a sip of coffee, and I'll read it to you. All right. What emerged, he writes, in 2 interviews with Trump and conversations with more than a dozen of his closest advisors and confidants were the outlines of an imperial presidency that would reshape America and its role in the world. To carry out a deportation operation designed to remove more than 11 million people from the country, Trump told me, he would be willing to build migrant detention camps and deploy the U.S. military both at the border and inland. He would let red states monitor women's pregnancies and prosecute those who violate abortion bans. He would, at his personal discretion, withhold funds, even though they've been appropriated by Congress. He would be willing to fire U.S. attorneys who don't carry out his orders to prosecute someone, breaking with a tradition of independent law enforcement that dates from America's founding. He is weighing or promising pardons for every one of his supporters accused of attacking the United States Capitol on January 6, 2021, more than 800 of whom have pleaded guilty or been convicted by a jury. He might not come to the aid of an attacked ally in Europe or Asia if he felt that country wasn't paying enough for its own defense. He would gut the U.S. Civil Service, deploy the National Guard to American cities as he sees fit, close the White House Pandemic Preparedness Office, and staff his administration with acolytes who back his false assertion that the 2020 election was stolen. That's just one paragraph, but it's the paragraph that sums up everything that follows. And I thought it was important to share that because, again, Trump is telling you who he is. And yet, if you were to bring this conversation up with some of your friends, neighbors, family members, they would say, no, that's the media making it up. No, he's just exaggerating. No, he's just saying that for effect. He would not do these things. These are the things he would do. These are the things he would like to do. No amount of whitewash or romanticizing the past can fully remove the dangers and the deaths and the deprivations that this country faced because of Donald Trump's term in office. And so when he's promising to make it even worse, you should believe him. Because as the article goes on to point out, Trump did as much as he could in his first term while being new to the office and while having all of these quote-unquote guardrails from traditional Republicans who would say, Mr. President, you can't do that. I'm sorry. They're gone now. They're gone. He has installed his daughter-in-law as head of the National Republican Party. You talk to any Republican Party member prior to 2015 and tell them that a Republican candidate for president would win and install a family member as head of the party, and they would say, over my dead body. But that is not the era that we live in now. And so, again, I highly recommend going to Time.com or going to buy the magazine, if it's even printed anymore. I honestly don't know when was the last time I picked up Time or Newsweek. But it's a very important interview and definitely worth the time to read so that you're a little more refreshed on, you know, what he would do, so that any conversations in the future, there can be no mistaking what Trump would do to America, not for America, to America in a second term. The Milwaukee Brewers beat Tampa Bay last night 8-2, but overshadowing the game was a brawl that broke out on the field. And you can't talk about that brawl without acknowledging that tensions were already high because of the home plate umpire who had to make the game all about him as the Brewers, for the third game in a row, face a bad call by an umpire, in this case, one that tossed Freddie Peralta off the mound, who was having a good game, accusing him of hitting a batter intentionally when there wasn't any clear record of it, and no warnings were issued first. He just tossed him. Tensions ran high. A couple of innings later, a fight broke out. But the teams will play again at 12:10 today, pregame at 11:35 on News from the Center, WRGN and Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. And the Bucks are still alive. They beat Indiana last night, Game 6 Thursday in Indianapolis. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday afternoon, or Wednesday morning rather, May the 1st, when you're here, you're up north. Live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitler. Ray Parker Jr. is 70 years old today. First, he had that group there, Radio, R-A-Y, Radio, and then Ray Parker Jr. had a solo career with a bit of a hiccup when he was sued because the theme from Ghostbusters sounded just a little too much like Huey Lewis's I Want a New Drug. But that besides the point, Ray Parker Jr. turns 70 years old today. Greg, were you aware that Senate candidate Eric Hovde, who's been trying so hard to show that he's a Wisconsin boy through and through, his commercials for the bank he owns in the Southwest are still airing out in the Southwestern TV markets. Where he's got this big old, you know, Wild West mustache on and talking about his bank. And he's trying to convince us that he's all Wisconsin. I cannot believe he's still running commercials with himself in it out there.
I'm not surprised. We, you know, you and I have talked about this. Jane and I have talked about this on Matt and Air on Air. And I just don't think he's a terrible candidate. He doesn't really know what he's doing. And he doesn't have a professional staff around him giving him good advice. If he did, they'd have been like, don't jump in the lake. Just don't.
Keep your shirt on.
Not a good idea. I mean, he just
button that shirt. Yeah.
But he's a guy who wants it both ways. He wants us to think he's from Wisconsin, but he does want to let go of that stuff out west because that's his bread and butter. I mean, that's how he makes his money.
Yeah, quite literally. And so as a result, I was looking at him like, is that really the case? And yeah, apparently that he still is. So he's going to only make his job that much harder as we go through the campaign. Back to May 1st for a moment. I don't know. Is this a consideration for you, the whole thing about what's called No Mow May? Not to mow your lawn in the month of May?
Okay. Yeah. So.
Uh-oh. I might have wound somebody up. I'm just going to sit back for a minute. Greg, what do you think?
The very handsome.
Handsome and lovable? What are you trying to say?
The very handsome and capable Luke Mathers and I were having a discussion about this yesterday. So my lawn got a little out of place. I was that guy in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has really nice manicured lawns, and mine was very, very long. It started growing a lot quicker than a lot of people were saying, like, oh, I'm finally mowing my lawn. I'm like, I should have mowed my lawn like a month ago. But this past weekend on Saturday, I went through and I mowed the lawn, my front lawn, three times. Like, mowed it, bagged it, mowed it again, got to a perfect length. It's good. The backyard is still unruly. And people have been saying, well, just don't mow it for No Mow May. I'm like, I understand the environmental impact. And I know what I'm about to say is going to basically say, but I don't care. If you want me to do No Mow May, that's fine. But then you are showing up at my house on June 1st and you're going to mow my backyard. Because
With a baler
mm-hmm. and three of your friends, because it will be a haul. So I will not be participating. I understand it's good for the environment, but also if it was really great for the environment, you'd do it every day of the year and not just a month. So
true. Apparently though, you know, the early season pollinators have become all the buzz in recent years. That's not my line. That's from Kendra Minert of the Green Bay Press Gazette, writing about, you know, people who may or may not choose to take part in No Mow May, which apparently she writes got started in 2019 with Plant Life, a United Kingdom wild plant conservation charity. And then it was picked up in 2020 by Appleton, Wisconsin, which apparently became the first U.S. city to declare No Mow May to help the pollinators, the bees, the butterflies, the wasps, the moths, the beetles, the flies. But you also have to be mindful that, you know, where you live, you might have either a city or a homeowners association that expressly prevents that.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I do not. That was a non-starter with me and Bridget. I said, do not show us a house with an HOA. I refuse. I'm not paying a mortgage and then a rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand and support the premise behind it. And so if that is what some folks want to do, I do not have a problem with that. I think maybe, especially in cities where there's not a lot of wild green space to begin with, mm-hmm. so that if they're, you know, if you can have a little extra wild green space for, you know, at least a month in the springtime, that much I get. I mean, out here in the country, frankly, they've got entire farm fields and, you know, plenty of other places that never get mowed where they can go to. So I'm definitely not looking to start any kind of a conflict here, but I think you and I are on the same page. Like, hey, if you want to do it, but I don't think anybody should be in the business, say, of, you know, trying to shame people into it, for example.
I agree. And I mean, honestly, like it's fairly new. Like, I only heard about it last year for the first time ever. And I also have I know people who don't mow their lawn at all. I know people who don't rake their leaves because a friend of mine who's into nature, he says, you know, leaving the leaves on the ground helps with the bugs and the nutrients and whatnot. And I'm fine with that. That's what you want to do. But I just can't do it. I'm becoming too much of my father.
We've got a couple of houses here on the street along the lake that don't have lawns mm-hmm. and have gone with like an all wildflower variation. And here's the thing, and now I'm going to get the neighbors mad at me, but for about maybe 6 to 8 weeks tops, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Nothing but these wildflowers. But so much time on either side of it, when they haven't bloomed or when they are post-bloom and are dying, it has an Adams family kind of look to it. It's just all these brown stems out there. And they're very close together. So I've mentioned every year, I'm like, I wonder if anybody's hiding a body in there this year. You know, because you'd have to know Mo a lot more than May to hide a body in there.
Yeah.
But you could definitely do it on some of these that go with the all wildflower, you know, prairie look to them, where, again, looks nice for a bit, but is it functional? We have never tried to overutilize, you know, what little times that we do fertilize the lawn. We definitely are not looking for the manicured lawn, especially living on a lake. You have to be very, you know, mindful of that. There's enough trouble already in that, so you don't want to exacerbate it. But by the same token, you know, I'd rather not look like the front yards in Arizona. There's a reason I don't live there.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't want it all brown and rocky.
No, I agree. I don't have the time to manicure it perfectly. I don't have 5 hours out of a Saturday, but what I do have is enough time to just at least make sure that it's on the same level, figuratively and literally, as my neighbor. So when people drive through, it's not like, oh, look at that lawn. Look at that lawn. Oh, what's wrong with them? Have they left the house recently?
You definitely don't want that. And look, we have a lawn tractor, and it's very nice for our little plot here, which is just short of, you know, 1 acre. But boy, when I see the people who are mowing what appears to be like 3, 4, 5 acres.
No.
That's a bit much. That's too far for me.
Hire a child.
or just let more of that grow a little bit wild. Why don't you? So no mow May. It's something that folks can decide that today is the day that they're not going to do that.
Today is the day for no mow May.
Today is the day for no more. It's gonna be
no May.
We have to put a no mow in there somehow next. When we come back, we have our homeroom segment where we talk about public education in Wisconsin and a new report from the State Department of Public Instruction about the teacher shortage. How do we get here? What kinds of things can we do? We'll talk to that with our guests next. Live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlow. All right, now when we go into our next segment here, I'll understand if you have a knee-jerk reaction and you're just screaming at your radio, Act 10, Act 10, Act 10, Act 10. There's more to it when describing the situation that faces educators in Wisconsin in this day and age. There's a demographic component, there's a compensation component, and yes, there also is, you know, a component of respect or lack thereof by some of the elected leaders here in the state of Wisconsin. But it's a multifaceted concern. And so here to tell us a bit more about the scope of the, you know, the situation are two folks from the Eau Claire School District. Mark Goings is here. He's the president of the Eau Claire Association of Educators. Lauren Zigowitz is a school librarian and educator here in Eau Claire in the Chippewa Valley. Lauren, Mark, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
All right.
Good morning,
let's start with, you know, what the basis for this conversation is, a new report that was recently released by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. It's 98 pages long and says that, you know, that educators are continuing to leave the workforce at an alarming rate and that compensation has decreased nearly 20% over the past 12 years. If you're talking constant $2022 over that period. Mark, I'll start with you. Any surprise in what you heard about or read into this report?
No, the essence of the report, it was not something that surprised me at all. I think it's sad for our state and for the children of our state. But ultimately, this is something that we need to get a handle on, because if you look at just from a demographic standpoint, there's fewer college age people now than there were 20 years ago. And so we need to get better at bringing them into the education realm, but then also obviously keeping them.
And Lauren, what was your own impression? Do you feel like more people understand the gravity of the situation, or is there there's still too much of a sense out there like, oh, schools will be fine. They'll always find a way to teach the kids. Oh, Lauren looks to be frozen here. Sorry.
Yeah, our kids, but unfortunately.
There, Lauren, I think we've got you back.
Oh, sorry if it's cutting out.
No, that's okay. You're back now. Go ahead.
Yeah. Unfortunately, like, we will figure it out. Like, we will do what's best for our kids. But it's hard when we have less people in the that are interested in education that are able to be there in the classrooms with our kids. We will have to do room. We are not having as many qualified people. So there's people, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's people that aren't completely licensed, like they're getting licenses with stipulations, for example, that are filling in and are not completely done with their programs. And while it's great experience for them, it's not really the direction we want our field to go. We really want the most qualified individuals.
Right. We're not looking for necessarily on-the-job training has its place, but it's not meant to be a substitute, no pun intended, for a properly trained educator. And so, Mark, let's get to the part first about retaining teachers. And it appears that they're leaving at key times. I don't know if they're leaving the profession or if they're leaving Wisconsin, but it feels like the report kind of identified maybe a pressure point or an area to focus on when it comes to retaining teachers, you know, for the long run. Did you get an impression like that from the report?
Sure. And actually, I, and Pat, if it's okay, I'm going to go back even a little farther than that. One thing the report says is that if you look at students going into education, starting their education programs, we are comparatively doing very well with their surrounding states. But as far as the ones that actually become licensed, we drop down a fair amount. And one of the things I think about with that is, like there was a 20-year or so area person from one of our universities that worked with people at student teaching levels. And she was talking with me just like a few months ago and saying that she had never seen the number of people who started student teaching who said, you know what, this isn't for me. I can't do this. And so you had brought up Act 10 and mentioned the compensation side. So that's one thing, to have a 20% reduction in the compensation part. But also the other part of that is schools have been getting starved of funds. And one of the ways they can resolve that is by having class sizes go up, workloads go up. So those people that you are employing are working longer hours with more students, more reports, more everything. And I think that's what, when you look at a work-life balance, that many of our young people, when they start into the profession, say, you know what, I just can't do this for 30 years or, you know, that sort of thing. And so I think that is that real shock to many, many of our young folks is, not only am I coming in with greater student loans than generations before, I'm being compensated less than generations before, but also when you look at my daily life, I'm being expected to do more than generations before. So it essentially is creating that perfect storm.
It is. And, you know, add to it again, the, you know, the political, you know, antipathy or outright hostility toward public education, but also, and that carries over to a degree to fatigued voters who are now chasing or being asked to approve a record number of referendums to raise their own taxes because the legislature isn't keeping up with state funding. And sometimes those referendums fail. And I'm looking at an article here in the Janesville Gazette out of Evansville that says, in the wake of a failed April 2nd referendum, the Evansville Community School District is planning to eliminate 14 positions, including 11 teachers, for the next school year. So, Lauren, again, it's decisions made in the state capitol and maybe in school boards, but it has to feel sometimes like there's still a an ongoing public relations campaign within your own community to let people know about the value of education?
Yeah, sorry, cut out there at the end, Pat.
That's okay. Just tell us what it feels like to have to make the case to, you know, your own friends and neighbors about supporting referendums and supporting public schools.
Yeah, it's just really so important. Unfortunately, the state isn't giving us the funding that we need, and we are having to go to referendum. Our district will be going to referendum in the fall.
Okay. Here.
And there will be less teachers if this thing doesn't pass. It's not fair to the kids because they're going to be the ones that are really going to be hit the most with this. And unfortunately, the local voters are going to have to support our school because right now the state isn't.
Which gets to be a lot harder when, you know, some of those folks locally aren't talking about supporting public schools, but are talking about, you know, book banning and trying to, you know, micromanage the curriculum and things like that, Mark. So this has been perhaps as trying a time as educators have faced, you know, going back to when public education was first, you know, considered to be a public good in the state of Wisconsin. But apart
from— By the way, Pat, I don't know if Lauren was even born when the state funding formula was put in place.
That's true, 1993.
So
yeah. Yeah.
And, yep, that's the same year I was born. So we've been in this system
for 5 years. It was supposed to last for 3 to 5 years because at that time our state was going through some budget concerns, and that's been there ever since. And as a sad thing, there, one of the things that created was it ultimately began pitting schools against schools or districts against districts. Because that funding formula was all based on what you're spending on a child that year. And like in Eau Claire has been valued less on a per student basis than most any other district. And so, you know, why is it a child is worth less in Eau Claire than in other areas? But I'd also add in that, in putting those caps on, that is when the referendum system really began. And that's where districts do have to as ultimately systematically go to their constituents and say, is this something that is needed here in the community? And because of that, all across the state, we're increasingly having haves and have nots, where, you know, then ultimately that really impacts the student's success.
So, I mean, it really is almost a perfect storm of conditions that have been building since, you know, the quote unquote reforms of 93 and the quote unquote, you know, reforms that came from Act 10. You just had this real double whammy. And I recall, you know, being in the legislature in, you know, 08, 09, 2010, during the Great Recession, when we were forced to continue to make, you know, cuts because of the way the economy was, and thinking, wow, if we ever get back to a really healthy time where we're, you know, we're not facing deficits, maybe we even have a budget surplus, we could do something with this. We could get the school financing model back on track. Well, here we were sitting with a $7 billion surplus at one point, and really about the only thing the Republican-led legislature, you know, could be persuaded to do was put some more money toward public schools, but a whole lot more money toward the voucher program, a second school district that taxpayers are funding here. Mark, I'm not sure what, you know, where you go on this besides hoping that you get a different crop of legislators who might want to put some more value on school quality, teacher retention, and things like that.
One of the things, and it is a matter of getting the word out to the average citizen. Because, like, for example, we have many people in the Northwoods where there's not necessarily all that many voucher options for them, but their tax dollars are going to support vouchers. And so that's one thing that I would think for many people they'd be surprised by. Or like in the most recent budget, the fact that for special ed, vouchers are reimbursed at voucher schools are reimbursed at 90%, and the public school is reimbursed at about 30%. And actually, quite often, that becomes lower than 30 because it's essentially whatever money's left over. And so why to the average citizen, I don't think that makes sense. To the average citizen, why is it reimbursed at 90 here and 30 there? Other than being vindictive, I don't know that there is any sort of actual rationale to that.
No, there doesn't seem to be. And look, I try to follow this kind of material, and yet, what was it, a year and a half ago or so, my eyes almost popped out of my head when I first saw and read about just what you talked about there, the special education reimbursement, which is, in the 30% range for public schools, but in the 90 to 100% range for voucher private schools. And that is a decision made by lawmakers, to short shrift public schools that way. But, Lauren, if to wrap things up, we understand that politicians could make better decisions, they could appropriate more funds, but given what you have to work with, are there other strategies out there to try to retain teachers and keep them from leaving the profession or moving out of state? Or are, kind words and encouragement all we really have to offer given the current political climate?
Yeah, so I would ask that our listeners, even if you don't have kids, that you really are thinking about supporting our teachers. And really that means in the elections, we need people in politics that are supporting our future. They're our future community members, and we need them to be productive, well-educated members of our communities.
Yeah, these are the people who are going to be the leaders in our communities of tomorrow, or they're going to join, the caravans of young adults who have decided to leave Wisconsin and put down, roots in other states instead. And we do that at our own peril here. Lauren Zigowitz and Mark Owens, both in the Eau Claire School District, Lauren Library, and Mark is president of the Eau Claire Association of Educators. Thank you so much, both of you, for explaining some of the environment behind the survey. We appreciate your insight and hope you have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Pat.
You bet. When we come
back,
Todd Alba will be here to tell us what's coming up on his show next across the Civic Media Radio Network this afternoon here up north. Again, happy birthday to Tim McGraw, 57 today.
Every Friday night, there's a steady cloud of dust.
Todd Alba joins us now from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show, which you can catch early afternoons here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Mr. Alba, you appear to be back home. Our ambassador to... you've worn out so much tire tread on behalf of this radio network, and it's nice that you can actually put your feet up at home for a chance.
A little coffee at home, yeah, absolutely. Morning, Pat. Morning, Greg. We're home for a couple of days, and then actually coming up to the beautiful Chippewa Valley on Friday, and I believe, Mr. Kreitlow, you and maybe a couple other folks are going to join us, and looking forward to that.
Yes. Well, tell the folks the main reason you're talking to somebody for an event that really captures a huge slice of recent Eau Claire history.
Yeah, coming up, we're going to be interviewing BJ Hollers. He is the director and producer of this brand new film. It's a documentary called When the Rubber Hit the Road. And it is essentially a documentary on the closing of the Uniroyal plant in Eau Claire several years ago. And it's important for a lot of reasons. One, it's going to be the premiere at the Pablo Center in downtown Eau Claire. For those around the state that aren't familiar, it's, how long has it been there, Pat? A year, 2 years or so?
Just a few years here. And yeah. It's just gorgeous. It's the jewel of downtown redevelopment. And I can't recommend it highly enough for any kind of a show you might see there.
Yeah, I saw Garrison Keillor live there over the winter, and it was spectacular, and just blown away by the entire building. So we're gonna try to focus on the Pablo a little bit, but then this film, When the Rubber Hit the Road, is important for historical reasons. It tells a story that Pat, from the Chippewa Valley up there, really economically, emotionally, relationship wise, it really tore through the Chippewa Valley when Uniroyal closed down, and also just talk a little bit about when these things happen. I mean, there's a closure, obviously, to hospitals right now and health facilities in Chippewa Valley. We've seen other places in Southeast Wisconsin, Southwest Wisconsin, the Brown Brown County area. These big companies or any major employer closed down, it has a deep effect. And so it's an important film. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk to BJ Hollers a little bit, again, the director and producer of this film. And you, Pat Kreitlow, were a young cub reporter at the time. So I'm looking forward to your remembrances as well.
I was in college where there were all the time, you know, rumors about Unirail might close the plant or they might, you know, transfer jobs to plants in other states. And then I was away for a time when the big news actually hit. But there was a young reporter there who I went to college with, Judy Clark, who has she was my co-anchor at Channel 13 for many years. And she's still there to this day anchoring the news. But again, she was a young reporter. You'll see her in this documentary. It was obviously the first big story that she covered. And she's going to join me on your show at some point on Friday afternoon to talk about her memories. I mean, it was that look back in time now where, you know, if you ever picture like the big crowds that take up an entire street at like a state fair or a summer fest or, you know, anything like that, that's what it looked like every day as the workers with their lunch pails left the Unirail plant and walked, you know, anywhere from one block to a mile, wherever their houses were. You know, that was true blue collar, working class economy there. And then it all went away. Like happened in so many other factories, but I really have to commend the folks behind this documentary for helping keep it alive because people see the factory now. Right. It's not a factory anymore. It's more like a business incubator. It's almost like a business park. It's a nice story, success story, and it's not just a rusting hulk just sitting there, but it's important to know what once was a vibrant part of the local economy.
Right. I totally agree. And yes, I mean, it's not all bad news or sad news. There has been some redevelopment there. And kudos, as you said, to those local folks in Eau Claire. And they're trying to do more with it. My sister lives not very far from the building. I've been by it, been to it. But yeah, I think it's just really important that we all remember the history of Wisconsin and what people have been through. And I'm looking forward to this documentary, When the Rubber Hits the Road. I believe tickets are still available. If you're in the Chippewa Valley area, you can get them through the Pablo Center at the Confluence. So looking forward to that. And, of course, anytime I get to hang out with Pat Kreitlow, I mean, it'll be a good time had by all. So
absolutely.
Looking forward to that.
Goodness, you can't argue with that. Let's switch gears, and I want to ask you something that Greg and I talked about earlier, but from the text line, we've heard from Lynn in Oconomowoc about No Mo May. And she says, she writes, my daughter has a corner lot in Genesee. Last year, she posted a sign, No Mo May. Near the end of the month, a neighbor called and asked if her mower was broken and if she'd like to borrow theirs, which I think was a thinly veiled swipe.
That's just some USDA grade A Wisconsin passive aggression. Mwah.
Mwah. Can't sit out. So, Lynn, I hope your daughter had a proper retort for the folks there about No Mo May. And you know, Greg and I were saying, hey, if that's what you want to do, you go ahead. Don't shame anybody who doesn't. It's just how we roll. I don't know how things are in Richland Center if your hometown just overgrows there and you need a machete at the end of the month to see your neighbor.
No, I don't think that's the case. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure there's a few people in the old RC that observe it. And, you know, I guess to each their own. But yeah, I think I heard earlier. I'm on the side of Greg. Like, if you wanna do No Mo May or want me to, then you come over and mow it on June 1st
because
it's just. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on our show, and Aaron Zomers brought up, you know, yes, it can be, you know, help the environment a little. But what about those poor bees or insects, whoever, that build a home for 30 days and then you evict them with a lawnmower? I mean, they're just getting started, you understand? And they're kicked on the street. So, you know.
Never thought of it that way, yeah.
And
do you want to be a landlord that doesn't let them live where they need to live?
I think other people have called into our show. Well, you guys have probably heard this in your shows. I think a better thing is to do something that lasts all year and plant native species grasses or flower beds next to your lawn and have something that's going to be there all the time that can be an environment, plant, you know, perennials that flower, that attract butterflies, the hummingbirds, and are good for the insects. I think that's a longer term helpful solution.
Sounds very accurate to me. You can catch more Garden Talk with Todd Alba coming up at noon as he previews the visit today by former President Trump to the Waukesha County Expo Center. So you hear Todd talk about it, followed by Maggie Dawn on her show. And then tonight is the Democratic primary forum for candidates in the 3rd Congressional District. It'll be at UW La Crosse at 6:30. And you can hear those candidates, Rebecca Cook, Katrina Shanklin, and Eric Wilson on WLCX in La Crosse, the TAP here in the Chippewa Valley, WRCE in Richland Center, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. So much for Todd to talk about on his show this afternoon. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. I hear that Vegas is opening a line on Katrina Shanklin. So if you're going to put money down on the forum tonight, that's where you put your money. Brett Musburger calling the odds.
Listen to you. All right. You have a great day. Greg, we'll see you with Jane's show a little bit later on. Thanks to all of you for being here. Have a wonderful Wednesday. We'll see you up north tomorrow morning.